And we have a champion. First 12-team playoff. It goes to the Ohio State Buckeyes, who, again, I will say, would not have been Brent Rollins in the 4-team playoff, but we expanded it. The 8th seed makes the first ever 12-team playoff. And, man, it looked like it was going to be a runaway, Brent. It looked like it was going to be an arse whipping. But Notre Dame, not surprising the way they've played all year long. They fought, they clawed, they scratched back in this football game. They made it entertaining, at least. And if you're an Irish fan, just another thing to love about your team. They didn't quit. They didn't lay down. That's not in their DNA. That's not who they are. You saw Freeman, you know, getting back in it. But ended up being a pretty decent football game.
Yeah, and that's all I want to see always when it's like this. And I really never really have any general rooting interest. I just wish for good football games, and we got that because Notre Dame didn't give it up, like you said, and Ohio State is 26 seconds away from being crowned national champ. Ryan Day, Will Howard, question for you. To me, I think Will Howard becomes truly the first transfer portal quarterback champion. Like, I know Burrow went to LSU and then eventually won, but he was there, and it was his second year that they won. Like, this is the true one-year rental. Stetson was at Georgia, then left, then came back, and then was there for back-to-back years. So, like, one year, pick your guy. It's now Will Howard in terms of leading the pack there for Ohio State.
Yeah, and the Buckeyes, man, I just love it. I love the I love their team. I love their dynamic, man. They did a good job competing, offense, defense. Ryan Day and Chip Kelly, and just the morphing into what they became. Now, I'll be honest, the second half, they morphed back to the old school Ryan Day and got very conservative. And very. I'm serious, man. I was like, dude, this is not who you've been. And, you know, first half, your boy Will Howard, daggum, 14 of 15. Like, it's one thing to have weapons. It's another thing to have a quarterback who's 6'5", who's 235, who can run. Third down situations, he converted 8 third downs with his legs. He was 14 of 15 in the first half for a 144. Like, he was the catalyst. He was the guy that made this go. It's good to have weapons, but if you don't have guys that can get it to him and make reads and get the ball out, he got it out quick. The offense went 4 for their first 4 drives and got touchdowns. Now, the start for Notre Dame was majestic. Like, if you want to draw up a start, no, if you want to draw up a start of how to beat Ohio State, what are we talking about? Shorten the game. Who would win the SEC, or who would win the line of scrimmage of third down and short, fourth down and short, goal line situations? Riley Leonard, the first series, 9 carries. Dude went to the sideline, yacked, and just like got all the oxygen in the tank. They ran out of the tank. They had to get another tank because he was trying to survive. And you knew that couldn't stay up. But Brent, it was the way you start a football game. They had 4 third downs, all third down and 2 or shorter. They converted 2 fourth downs. He ran the ball 9 times. They ate up 9:45 on the clock. Like, picture perfect start for Notre Dame.
Unreal. And just, but the thing was that was, you look at how Ohio State answered on their drive, and it's like, wow, one team just had to work to death to score, and the other was just like, boom, boom, 12, 13, touchdown. And that's kind of when you're like, uh-oh, because after that start for Notre Dame, it was all downhill and for the most part until finally they just started airing out and made a few plays down the field, and that's what got interesting. But from a start standpoint, and looking at Ohio State in this game, and obviously they're the focus because they're the champ, but it felt very much like the Indiana game where it's like, okay, we're going to play our just sort of base 4-man front. What are you going to do? Okay, you go down and score, fine. We didn't stop you. And then after that, we're going to start bringing pressure, and we're going to clamp down on you, and then you're not going to be able to do anything. And that's what it was for the next, say, quarter and a half for Notre Dame.
Well, you think about the, like, fourth down and 2 fourth down conversions are not going to continue. Obviously, you saw the third and shorts didn't continue. But again, if you're a methodical offense like Notre Dame is, what happens? You have a holding penalty. Your second series, it's over. It's a wrap. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's just – and again, you hit the nail on the head, too, with Ohio State. I love what you said because Abuka touched it. Henderson touched it. Smith touched it. Judkins touched it. Will Howard touched it. Like, they have so many guys that can beat you. And when you looked at Notre Dame, it was like you got your quarterback, Riley Leonard, and Greathouse in the second half. Jaden went off. Like, he had 111 and two touchdowns in the second half and really went bananas. But just not enough weapons, not enough, you know, ability to do different things and to mix it up and change it up. But Ohio State, the weapons, Will Howard got really, really good. But it was the second drive for me with Notre Dame when they false started. When they got the holding penalty, and then third drive, by the way, bad snap. They rushed to the line of scrimmage, and you could tell Riley Leonard was looking at the play clock, clapping for the football. His tight end's coming across the formation. He's trying to make sure they don't get a delay of game. Snaps it too soon, and it hits the tight end. It bounces forward. Boom, we got to punt the football. And you got to keep giving it back to Ohio State, who obviously just kept scoring at nauseam, at will. Stayed aggressive. And again, God dang, man, Will Howard was stupid. Like, on the run, throwing to the left, throwing to the right, throwing to the middle, throwing against zone, throwing against man. Every time they needed a third down and short, running the football. I mean, Ohio State's offense just continued to be too much for that stretch in the first half.
And just, we talked about this before the playoffs. Who could be the Joe Flacco, have that just sort of crazy run of stretch of games, and it was Will Howard. Like, it was him. He carried the load for them offensively. And the other part we talked about in the couple of things that we talked about sort of previewing the game. One was wide receiver 3 and wide receiver 4 for Ohio State, infinitely better than what they had a year ago. And just what makes them that much harder to stop is that you have Carnell Tate and Brandon Ennis, who are 5-star kids, young guys that are your wide receiver 3 and 4, and Tate makes a couple early catches. Ennis, finally, they get some pressure. The third down conversion where he puts the DB in a on skates, and they finally get, and Howard makes the throw right in the face of pressure. Like, that was, I think that was, and then strategically, like, you had asked me, hey, would Notre Dame play their man style? And I thought, yes, they should just live on that and die by that, basically. And they didn't. And they looked uncomfortable defensively in the first half. There was a lot of underneath or missed assignments that you just haven't been used to seeing from their defense all season.
But when they played man late, look what happened.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Jeremiah Smith over the top in the biggest play of the game. Boom, goes the dynamite. How about the play design for the touchdown to Smith, too, on that first drive? Like,
yep.
Because here's one thing that's really, really cool. Like, we all watch the same tape, and we all study the tape. And you could tell Jeremiah Smith was about to go in motion. You could tell by his body language. You could see Gray pointing, literally, it's about to happen. He's about to go in motion. When we're playing man-to-man and go in motion, like, I got to go with him, or I got to coordinate with somebody else. He's yelling. Smith goes across the formation for a second. It's almost twirl motion-esque, but he stops and comes back. And you could see Gray literally running across the field to try to go head him off. Elite play design. I mean, really, really good job of understanding that. So, yeah, I don't knock Notre Dame for that. Like, Brent, you could have the slow death or you can have the fast death. And I think if you play man to man, especially cover 0, a lot of cover 1 with their weapons, it's going to be very, very tough. And they had some success with it. They mixed it in. They got more pressure in the second half, which is why, you know, they had more success. They forced the fumble, which was good, the little punch out. But, you know, listen, Notre Dame, we talked about it going into the game. They were overmatched. They were overpowered. Like, they had to have some breaks and some things go their way. And they were prepared, they were ready, and they came out on that first drive. But after that, man, I also counted too. Riley Leonard, first half from the pocket, 3 easy layups he missed. Like, easy layups that that could have kept drives together,
yep.
that could have moved the sticks. He really, really struggled in the pocket. Now, in the second half, he got better. The defense obviously changed too. And they were okay because they were up and got up 28-7 and felt pretty comfortable. And then Riley made plays. And then you saw Greathouse get going. You saw his tight end get going. But I think that within the pocket, they wanted Leonard to beat him. And early, he was a little bit happy feet, couldn't make those plays.
And just uncomfortable. And that's the thing that – and even sometimes when he scrambled, he would scramble to me where – not necessarily where he knew which receivers would be. He was just scrambling just to scramble, like, okay, I'm going to go to open space. And that's I think, the next evolution for him as he grows and develops as a quarterback that you just don't see quite yet from him. But, hey, they finally took some shots. Greathouse made a few plays.
It worked.
And then all of a sudden – confidence is there, and then he feels himself, feels much more comfortable in the pocket, moving around, looking downfield, knowing he has to get rid of the football, and made plays much more so in the second half. But overall, like, this is the sort of what we thought Ohio State would be at the beginning of the year when you looked at the preseason and who you thought would be the top
most talented team.
That was them, and they finally put it all together in the final after the Michigan loss. Little look in the mirror, and they showed it. Once they got rolling, it's hard to stop that because the talent discrepancy was very evident for a while, and then the fight and Ohio State kind of seemingly taking a breath made it a game late, which, hey, I was glad to see because I didn't want to, you know, come on here and talk about, you know, 42-7 or something like that.
All right, Brett, you're PFF. You study the game. You know these, like, decisions. And obviously the two-point decisions weren't decisions. 9 minutes left, I think it was. Was it about 9 minutes left?
9:27.
Down 16, fourth and goal. Pretty good field position. Pretty good opportunity to go for it. I don't care about the results of the field goal. I care about the decision. Results don't matter.
Process.
Was it the right decision to kick a field goal there in the handbook rule that you guys you yeah. nerdlings
well, follow? There's a lot of various models that are used. There's one primary one that's been constructed, but basically it points a picture of, hey, if you go for it, all right, what happens if you actually succeed versus fail? Kick the field goal, succeed versus fail. It was basically a toss up in terms of win probability and win percentage. If you go for it and succeed, you went from a 3% chance of winning to a 7% chance of winning. If you kick a field goal and make it, you basically up your percentage by 1%. I think the success of a going for it and scoring more, but it's still sort of infinitesimal in terms of that. So it was kind of a toss up. I didn't like the decision.
I don't even
I didn't
know
like what it at all.
Infinitesimal means you can't use words like that.
Sorry. But yeah, like the decision at all.
Okay, the decision sucked, and I say that because you're going against a prolific offense that went their first four possessions got four touchdowns, fifth possession got a field goal because you ran a fake punt and gave them good field position. Side note, besides that, they fumbled, was how you stopped them. Like, I think you just knew you weren't going to stop them enough, and that's where I get into the. When we start to have these conversations about going for two, when you go for two, what the card says about it, like. Who am I playing? Are they really talented on offense? Are they really talented on defense? All these things need to go into the equation. I think you knew it was a long shot. Like, it was absolutely a long shot. You had good field position. You had pretty good momentum. How many more times were you going to realistically stop that offense? You had gotten some breaks that you really, really needed. I think here's the thing about Marcus Freeman. I just love that Marcus Freeman consistently stayed aggressive throughout this season. I thought it's the one time that he wasn't. He ran fake punts. He didn't kick field goals. He went for it on fourth down. And I was kind of like, I don't love this. I feel like we're playing to marginalize the score as opposed to go for it. It's not what cost him the game. No. It was just a decision that I would have loved to seen the hammer down, go for it. And kind of, I think, how he played it all year long.
And even the earlier fake punt, like, if you're, I think that was like fourth and two, maybe
fourth and two. It was fourth and two.
if you're going to do that, just put your offense on the field.
That's a Justin Fields move right there, putting your quarterback as the personal protector and sliding it in years and years ago that didn't work. I agreed with you. I didn't even know why. Like, when they ran the punt unit on, I literally looked at Nicholas and I said, fake. Like, because there's no way. You had to be aggressive at that point. It's 28-7, right? Like, you had to have something go. Or 28-14? 28-7,
I think
one
it was,
of the two.
I think it was 28-7 at that point. Did they end up getting the field goal?
And
was
I,
that
and
21-7 there?
I just think that, no, because they did get a field goal off of it. But I just think you needed to be aggressive with your offense. Riley Leonard was elite with his wheels, elite on short yardage situations. You hadn't had another short yardage situation since the first drive. And I just think you should have gone for that too. So I guess two knocks against, you know, decision making that goes into this. But again, it's not like the field was level when it comes to talent. It was severely slanted one way. And that's why Ohio State, you know, took care of business and got the championship, and they deserved it. And I don't care what they spent. I don't care about that number that people want to throw around. It doesn't matter. You still got to do this. And they did this. They put their egos aside. They adapted. They adjusted. They took care of business, and they're national champs because of it.
I mean, that's just – and what's amazing about it, like you said, is that in the previous iteration of what college football was, that doesn't happen. Yet they had that chance. And that's why I think if you're looking at winners of today, there's probably a Michigan fan out there who's still probably like, you won, but you wouldn't have been in a four teamer. We went 15-0. We still beat you, all that sort of stuff. So I'm sure the Michigan fans are still winning today, even though Ohio State won the championship. That's for sure. But like Ryan Day, we talked about it on Friday or actually yesterday. We talked about it, like what that means for him, the sort of
huge
monkey off his back. And when a month ago or 6 weeks ago, I guess now, probably so many people wanted to absolutely just kick him to the curb. And now he's a champion. And one of five coaches now with him. Urban Meyer being the last that have won a championship at Ohio State.
And the highest winning percentage in all of football. Like, in all of football, every coach, Ryan Day, has the highest winning percentage, and he's third all time in the history of the game. But we were talking about that dude being on the hot seat, you know, after the Michigan game. And listen, I get it. Like, it was an ugly moment. It was a really ugly moment, but because of the 12-team playoffs, you get chances to adapt, and you get chances to – they got a bunch of cold water dumped on them. They told how much they sucked, and then you got a chance to go back in the lab, and five top five wins for this team. Five. Like, it was impressive to watch them bounce back, and it was impressive the way they dominated the playoffs. And – you know, listen, they dominated this football game too. It was never in doubt. Like, we were very sure of, I'm sure the win percentage was through the roof from the second half on. Like,
yes.
I mean, that's how much it was slanted one direction. But again, to be able to morph, to be able to change, and they're not going anywhere. They're Ohio State. They've got some rebuilding to do, but they've got elite players. They'll be in the mix. And Ryan Day, I think, will be so happy to have that monkey off his back, to have fans off his back, to be more free to be himself and to let it rip and to be more aggressive and let the chips, you know, push all the chips in the middle. Because this offense got better because they decided we're going to take chances. We're going to throw the football. We're going to use our best players and accentuate them. And they did it. And that's why they're sitting here.
Back-to-back championships for the Big Ten. So Michigan last year, Ohio State this year. Other sort of unsung heroes, and not necessarily unsung, but big time players. Judkins was a manimal in this game and very hard to bring down. Tackling, I think, was an issue again for Notre Dame, much like it was against Penn State, especially early. But if you look at just the totality of their season, and it took Notre Dame scrambling to get to 20 points. We didn't think they'd get to 20 points. They finally did. And so now it was the two games against Oregon and then this game against Notre Dame. Those are the only games they gave up 20 points. like dominating performance by their defense. It got squirrely a little bit late because the ball was getting aired out. They got a few penalties, things like that. But like you said, for the most part, they dominated the game offensively.
By the way, that's one thing what you just said that I just – if I'm Notre Dame and I'm Denbrock, the OC, I kind of wish I'd have aired this out a little bit sooner. And I wish I'd have taken some of those chances because, dude, again – you could call a flag. Like I love when they show replays from the Ohio State secondary on who committed the holding or the PI, because you look across the board and everybody's holding. Everybody's got their hands on them. And again, it's not a flag if they don't call it. Let me be clear. It's not a flag. And if you're allowed to do that, I'm telling my kids, I'm telling them, like, get your hands all over these dudes. Like, you should take advantage of how they're reffing a game. That is absolutely your decision. That's how you should do it. And so the defense obviously made plays, but I think you kind of look back and you go, that outside advantage, great house. You know, he made some plays. They spit the ball in the perimeter. They drew some PIs. They drew some holding. They actually protected, you know, their QB. Riley had time most of the time. Now they made some plays and had him flush out and got a holding penalty or two. I think they'll look back, Brent, and say, I wish I'd have done a little more of that.
Yeah. Especially when you know you're the team that is at a disadvantage. Those are the things you have to do. You got to take those chances to ultimately win the game. Jeremiah Smith, he's basically going to be the best player on the field for the next 2 years. He was for the most part tonight. And he's going to be that way for the next 2 years. He's a different level. For Ohio State, I think the biggest thing for them, you had mentioned this earlier, the sort of meshing and the team part of it. All those guys that came back, Sawyer, JT, Henderson, like most of the money was spent there, bringing those guys back and preventing them from going to the NFL as much as anything. Yeah. But that's when you get that, those guys come back and then you get the ultimate prize. It makes it that much sweeter. As from a fan standpoint, I think, as well as because it's not like, for example, we'll say Ole Miss, who was a true almost portal team this year outside of, say, Jackson Dart and a couple other guys that were there consistently. Their defense was almost an entirely portal team. You if you win the championship with that, you as a fan, like, okay, it's awesome, it's great, but you don't have the connection. You haven't watched those guys for years on end. Like all these Ohio State fans, they've watched these guys for 3-4 years.
Yep.
And like seeing that, it just, much like with Georgia a few years ago, when you see guys like the Kobe Dean and whatnot, that, and Jordan Davis that stays around in your program, that makes it that much more special.
Yeah, it's pretty sweet to be able to do that. And you gotta pick off and you gotta supplement. That's part of it in today's world and get some other guys, but. Would you have that? I don't know.
No, I did not. I did not
continue to watch football when the teams are bought every. Everybody's buying teams now. By the way, everybody's spending a lot of money. There's nobody that's not spending money in college football. It's officially a business, and that's the way it's going to be. But again, the Notre Dame didn't spend a shoot ton of money to get where they got. They weren't uber talented, but they found a way to continue to – you've got to spend it at the right spots. Both of these teams bought their quarterbacks.
Yep.
Right? Like, both of them bought that, which I think that's going to be a big theme moving forward because the transfer portal is basically a quarterback portal. And then now it's become – that's what it started as, and now it's become a little bit more than that because the money is getting so good. But those guys are by far and away the most well-compensated, and those are the guys that come in with – yeah, with experience, they touch the football every play. And, you know, it's really hard to judge a lot of positions and how it transfers from college to the – or high school to the college level. So it's nice to go, okay, I've seen this QB do this. I've seen him make this throw. I've seen him in big-time spots and big-time moments and big-time games. And Will Howard, obviously, multi-year starter, won the Big 12 championship, you know, checked a bunch of the boxes for a Chip Kelly offense, especially. Now that happened, I think probably a little bit later than expected, but you know, everybody's spending money to buy teams. I don't really care about that, so to speak. That doesn't bother me, Brett.
All right. So now that we've seen the totality of the 12-team playoff, yay, nay, in, feel good.
I'm in. More football. More football. More teams really truly can get hot. Really cool that you got 8 versus 7 to start it. I mean, that's really fun to see. I'm not good with the bye system. That shiznit needs to go away. The best teams need to get rewarded. I am not down with that. So I'd like to see that change like tomorrow. It'll be great. Dan Lanning again got that rule changed in like 12 hours after his game. So we can change some of those rules and continue to tweak it. But I mean, more football is fantastic. More games that matter. You know, maybe change but I would change the seedings.
Timing too. I know I see a lot of complaining on social media about the lack of hype or talk about the championship game. Well, we also, got a new champion today. We also got a new president. So that kind of takes away from that. That takes a precedent a lot of times with certain things. But I do think the timing of it, how late this is, like compared to normal, I think that needs to be shrunk in some way, move back to where you're as close to New Year's as possible. Like to me, I think the semis
and not on a Monday night.
I think it should be a Saturday thing. Like
I would love to keep that. You know, it's just the Saturday tradition of it. Like the time not being an issue. Monday night's always difficult, man. I mean, like people are going to bed, people are going to work. Yep.
And I got class tomorrow.
I forgot my kids are sitting there talking to me and I'm like, oh crap, y'all got school tomorrow. Go take your butt to bed. Like, I mean, people having work and stuff too. I think that's something that probably needs to be addressed as well. Like this is a Saturday game. There's also Thursday night games. There's Friday night games. Like all of that has changed, but I would love to see the game finish in its own spot, its own window, get its due, get its glory. But it is a long season, and the NFL is the biggest, you know, contender with buying for time, and it's a hard schedule to navigate with all that stuff. But I would love to see it continue. I'd love to see it on a Saturday. That'd be fun to me.
Marcus Freeman, I think, just as a coach and one that you look at as a coach on the rise and someone that you put in that sort of upper echelon, I think he's very much there. I will say he's usually very confident, cool, calm, collected in the interviews. He was flustered tonight and you could tell it, like, cause it's like, okay, my team that I've seen all year play a certain way and do certain things and be this one, this is not my team. And I'm trying to figure out what the deal is here. And you could tell that was there very much there, but
every coach in America, by the way, you don't just jump into that spot and all of a sudden have all the answers. Like, you can read all the books, you can talk to all the coaches. Like, there's a process that you go through about winning that game. Like, it doesn't usually happen like that. And he's 39. Like, there's a lot of experience to go to. Who's the best coach in college football to you? Like, number one, who's the best coach that if you want to start your team with a coach, who are you taking?
I mean, it's Ryan Day, Kirby Smart kind of right now. Like those two.
Ryan Day one.
I mean, you kind of have to after tonight, right? Like he's at the top of the mountain at the current moment in time.
But you also got a coach that's won 2 natties.
I agree. I feel like, it's a toss up. If you take one game, like I would take Kirby Smart just because of what he's done consistently. But like you said. And the other thing I think that is still true for Ohio State is their talent discrepancy in the conference they play in versus what they have. They get 5 or 6. Like they didn't have to break a sweat into Oregon this year. Like I think that matters. So and for a few years it's been win one game against Michigan and that they didn't. So versus the grind of the SEC, I think that was one, but.
The SEC, who wasn't still in it? I was just watching.
The refs were.
They were watching for home. Yeah, the refs were. Hey, and a lot of the players. Judkins, Downs, you see a lot of the players that come from from the different leagues. I think it's fun to talk about best coaches because you could do the same thing with Dabo. Dabo's won two. Are you putting him in the top five with what you've seen from him in recent history? Like, I think all of that matters. But I think Marcus Freeman more than made a case this year with what he was working with and getting his team to believe, buy in. I think his coordinator punch is as good as anybody. I actually think Ryan Day, when he hired Chip Kelly, we talked about this before the season. I thought Knowles and Day are the best 1-2 punch in all of college football of coordinators. I mean, you got Chip Kelly, obviously, like genius, savant, done it at every level. Knowles is freaking ridiculous. Love him. Done it in different leagues, different styles, different ways. Big fan. But then bringing in Denbrock, I think, well, along with Al Golden, Notre Dame's not going anywhere. Like Notre Dame is just getting started, and I know what we're going to get here with Notre Dame hatred because they're a team that is hated. Okay, like there's a lot of hate. Like, there's a lot of hate that comes with Notre Dame.
But still, I think I think Freeman's done a lot to just the way he acts and his demeanor. I think it's.
I got you, but there's still a lot of people that see that green and Notre Dame that grew up with all that winning and. That they don't join a conference, Brent. They play by their own rules. Like there's a lot of people that hate that and that cheer against Notre Dame. And their schedule sucks. Yes, their own TV. Like there's a lot of things about them that like they're in a good spot. I mean they're privileged to be where they're at. But I like what they did. You know, 14 straight wins, earning it. I like their quarterback, man. I like his toughness. I like their grind. Like. But the coaching conversation is fun. There's a lot of good ones in college football. But I think Marcus Freeman proved he's in that conversation.
And what you said about the coordinator spot, and I think that's actually when you look moving forward at because of the way the talent gets redistributed and coaching becomes that much more important, is having these guys who are former head coaches who want to get out of the head coach, deal with all the other stuff, NIL and portal. Like
Chip Kelly, a lot of Chip.
Exactly. And you get that quality of coach who now gets to focus on the thing that actually made them great and got them jobs in the first place. Like that just elevates, that's rising tide lifts all boats kind of thing. And that's one. I will say one other thing. We mentioned Big Ten, SEC, Big Ten, all the conference part. I think college football to me has always been a, there's six or seven teams, you know, maybe some years it's eight, maybe some years it's three or four that are national championship or bust. And outside of that, every conference is tough. Every road game, you know, you get used to playing teams, you get used to playing coaches. Road games are tough. You played a big game one week, you played a, you know, lesser game the next week. It's tough, like to get kids up all the time. Like all that stuff is tough. But there's basically five or six every year that are national championship or bust. And the team that won it tonight is included in that category. Like Ohio State is that every year, and they should be.
And Notre Dame hasn't been that. They haven't been that for a long time. But I bet with this run and Marcus Freeman
and their young team
continue to build. Like I think, yeah, but they could lose a lot to the draft. It's going to be interesting to see their roster. But I think that spins into the top five for next year. Like. It's never too early, ladies and gentlemen. We just finished the national championship game. Congratulations to the Ohio State Buckeyes. I mean, I think we jump right into it, Brent. Like the top five next year. Like I spent some time on this list. Interested.
I'm glad you did.
And to see where we agree, where we don't agree. You want to kick it off?
So I actually put Ohio State number one, and that's even without knowing who their quarterback is.
You start at one? Come on, bro. You got to start at five. You work your way up. You can't put Ohio – you can't start it. It's too late now. Don't. Okay. No, you can't pull it back now. But
well, I'll go five. I'll go 5-1. I went Oregon, Penn State.
No. We can't talk about them? I mean, let's go one. Okay. Go ahead and give them to me because we'll have some similar ones. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, so Oregon, I mean, 5.
Yours is the only one that matters. Like your name's on the show, so it doesn't matter. Mine don't matter. But anyway, Oregon, Penn State, 4, Notre Dame, 3, Texas, 2, Ohio State, 1 is what I had.
Okay.
And then I've got a group of 4 that are kind of teetering on the outside.
Okay. I went number 5, Penn State. I went, we are – Koltunecki back, Drew Aller back, Singleton, Allen back. Knowing Penn State, they'll get a receiver in the portal. They'll find somebody out wide. Yeah, I mean they'll take care of business on that. I think they'll get some speed out wide. I think, you know, another year in Koltunecki's system, Brent, year two, I think helps them. So I think a lot of players back. I went Penn State 5. This one might surprise you. I went Clemson 4.
So they were 6. They were the first one looking out because it's a lot of it's about who's your returning quarterback.
How about this? Clemson 4. I saw enough from Klubnik to say he's going to be in the Heisman Trophy discussion next year. Like, his top three receivers are back. Their offensive line was not elite, was not great by any stretch. And here's the thing. Dabo Swinney is a guy that has always stuck to his guns. What does that mean? No transfer portal. Already addressing that, which I think is big. Needs to do that. Another thing Dabo Swinney, Brent, has always done, hired from within, his guys. He just went and got his defensive coordinator. He went to Penn State to get Tom Allen, who is a great fit for the culture. Like, that dude is a culture. He is so aligned with Dabo, but he's great with X's and O's. They gave up way too much in the run game. They made it way too easy on opponents. Like, I think Clemson immediately jumps back in the fray. They're in the mix in the ACC. I think they'll be the best team with all those things going for them.
Another former Oregon. Head coach, by the way.
Yeah. Yep. I went Oregon 3.
Okay.
I think Dante Moore, he's probably going to be the guy that, listen, he's not 20,000 years old. He's not with child, like not having 6 children and like Bo Nix and our boy this year, Gabriel. But he's only 19, but he signed out of high school with Chip Kelly, UCLA, which there's a common theme with most of these teams that we're going to talk to is that from here on in, they're all going to be transfer quarterbacks, by the way. I think Dante Moore, height, weight, speed, system, I think they'll continue to build what they have. They got some freaks coming in. Dan Lanning obviously is not going anywhere. That program's continuing to build and grow. So I had them 3. I have Ohio State 2. I think they're losing a ton, Brent. Like, Ohio State is losing a ton of dudes, like just guys, lunch pail guys that have been there for a long time. I mean, they've been dogs, that defensive side of the football. Yes, they've got Smith back, and yes, they got 2 on the other side. So both those dudes are going to be 4-2 are going to run the show, and they'll be really, really good. But Julian Sain, like, again, transfer QB from Alabama. When Nick left, he was like, peace out. I'm going to go holler at Ryan Day. And obviously, how does that look at that spot? You know, Noah Buka, who's an animal. Obviously, Tate looks good. Obviously, Smith looks good. But just a lot to replace with Henderson and Judkins and others that especially defensively, that I'm not ready to put them. So who do you think I got 1?
I guess I would say you're going to put Texas there, but
yes, sir.
I'm probably saying Longhorns. Texas. Yeah.
The Longhorns.
You're on the Arch train.
Well, it starts with Arch. He did plenty good and unlocked this offense really well when he was in the lineup, the deep ball was better. And I think this offense opens up vertically, but you also saw his ability to run the football. And so I think them getting Arch as the guy, more playmaking, their running back CJ Baxter, who got hurt before the season last year, who's a freak, will be in their running back spot. Even though they did great this year, obviously Blue was good. Wisner was good. That dude's got a chance to be like otherworldly good. And then Simmons is back and Hill Jr. is back and gosh dang Muhammad and all those guys. And you saw enough from 5. I think Wingo's going to be really, really good. Mm-hmm. So I think Texas, they still got the oil money cause that didn't go nowhere. I think their schedule is going to be pretty dang good too next year.
It's the same as it was.
It's the like same as
all
it
the
was.
SEC teams. Same schedule.
It's the same as it was. Obviously, you know,
so they got one game
travel
at Georgia.
To or host the reversal. But Texas, you know, they just inked Sark up. But I think Texas, to me, right now, number 1. There's obviously a lot of all season to happen too, because the guys I left right on the outside was UGA and Notre Dame, and I'm interested to see Notre Dame how many guys stay, how many guys go to the NFL. And Georgia, the quarterback spot, like that's a big spot. Maybe other changes coming to Athens to a restaurant near you, which could decide this and change this list, I think, as well. Because remember, we finished the first portal wave. There's another one coming. Like, yeah. If you think it's over, you're wrong.
There's another one. Yep.
A big one, a huge one that will come, that people get beat out in spring or not like this position they're in spring and say, peace out, that are really, really good, that are going to be elite on other people's rosters that will leave. So
I will say one thing I've noticed is the aggregators, the people who like just listen to the show and then write articles off the show because they want to hear what you have to say, because they've been taking your points about Georgia and running with them. Very much so. So they're waiting to see if you were correct. LSU was the other team for me that was kind of LSU, South Carolina on the bubble there because of the quarterback being back. And LSU's picked up some
big time transfers.
Some transfers. Now one receiver might have an issue, but a lot of transfers.
And Nussmeier staying. They need
Nussmeier being there.
Nussmeier staying was huge.
So those were the ones for me. I think it's a lot of the same cast of characters that we saw this year. Like Arizona State to me is one that will start a lot higher because of Leavitt coming back and a lot of their team other than Scadaboo returning. So that will be,
yes, they'll be better out wide next year. And they're still the same great coaching staff. And now their brand has gotten bigger and better. So their transfer opportunities will be more abundant. Like they'll have a chance to, I mean, they'll put their foot in the door. Like we're a 4th and 12 away from stopping Texas, who barely lost to the best team in the country. Like forks up, let's go. Come join us. Right. Like,
and they'll start higher too. Like they'll be preseason ranked and they won't be just ignored completely. Like they were this year, which they, by the way, they should have been because they were 3-9 the previous year, but still, yeah, I think that's a good list. One other winner today, by the way. I know I said Michigan fans, they probably still feel like winners today because they can say, hey, Ohio State, you won a national championship, but you still didn't beat us. Carrie Underwood was a big winner today for me because
she was fantastic.
The music didn't work. And then she was just like,
I'll go acapella.
I got you. Like, she's a big time winner. Carrie Underwood today.
She's an absolute stud. I like the comments. We always like to know where you're from too, by the way. If you throw that in there, we'll throw it in there as well of where you're listening, where you're from. But my man Antonio, hear me out. Florida will be an interesting team this year. 1,000,000% agree. Like, again, Ole Miss is in the playoff and maybe does damage if Florida doesn't exist and doesn't beat them. DJ Lagway, you're right. He showed up and he showed his talent level. He doesn't take a back seat to anybody. I mean,
no.
I don't care about the scrambling ability, the deep ball, the laser of an arm, the decision-making, the poise, showing some toughness too, playing hurt. Like, that dude proved a lot to me. Like, he proved a lot. And Florida lost dude after dude after dude in the portal. Like, people left last year, and everybody had a reason to be down on them, and they just kept going. And I think I'm just telling you this, Brent, you would love Billy Napier. Just an unbelievable human being. I love him. Like, just a good dude. Easy to root for. Made of the right stuff. And you can tell that because the guys rallied behind him. And man, they fought like crazy every single game. They were in almost every game, even though the injuries happened. They got blown out. I think it was by LSU, right? They got, Texas. Texas
killed them.
Texas stomped the mud hole.
That was Lagway didn't play that game. Good. Yeah. All right, Conroe, Texas, by the way, Antonio is listening to us from. Hey, somebody actually said that they would hear to listen to me too.
Yeah.
Hey, we got one. We got one.
Did they say Dr. Brent too, by the way?
Yeah, that's what it said.
That's right. Dr. Rollins. Remember, Brent writes for Rivals and PFF. He does the PFF. Like, he knows the game inside and out like nobody's business. Trust me. So everybody wants to hear from Brent.
It's mainly because of the day job, though, I think, for that one. Michigan's still the champs, by the way, according to my team is better than your team that Wes got on the screen here. So looking at how all of the transitive property score got me, however you want to look at it.
Oh, my gosh.
Or oh, sorry, Akron. Akron is actually the champion. Is the way I look at that. I need to go back. Read backwards
because
there,
Akron beat Toledo, who beat Northern Illinois, who beat Notre Dame, who beat Indiana, who beat Michigan, who beat Toledo, who beat Northern Illinois, who beat Notre Dame, who beat Indiana. I mean, come on, bro! Like, get out of here. I love that kind of stuff, though. I'm here for the pet. I'm here for all the pettiness. We'll be here for that for always. I love that stuff.
Yeah. Well, hey, it's been fun actually to talk about more teams than just one that I normally get to. So. Normally, I just have opinions about other, but now I've been fortunate enough to hang out with you and get to say a lot of things about other teams. And we go through a whole year, 12-team playoff, and guess who won? One of the Ohio State. You know, we looked at in the past, say, decade or so, Clemson, Alabama, Georgia, and Ohio State for the most, like, certain group of teams have been there, and it's Ohio State, so.
I think everybody before the season, it was Ohio State or Georgia. Everybody said those
were
the most talented teams. Those are the best teams. Like, it was literally, you know, give me those two or the field. And everybody was saying, I think you take those two teams, and it took care of business. And listen, we're not done here either. Like, we're going to jump right into the draft. We're going to do some of that stuff. I think it'll be really, really fun. As you know, like, you could hear Doc yesterday when we were talking to Coach Braun, or 2 days ago, like, he's breaking down Northwestern tape. So he's got that covered. Always going to have opinions. I'm interested too, to see the quarterback class that's coming up is going to be fun to watch, because I don't know that there's a guy. Like, last year to me, Jaden Daniels was my guy. Now I think Caleb Williams just got, getting Johnson to come to from the Lions. That's insane. That's so good, because I think he's one of the best coaches in all of football, especially designing offense. It's going to hurt Jared Goff and the Lions, but it's going to really help the Bears. But,
the draft is going to be interesting, because, like, you look at last year's draft and really the last couple years' draft, there's potential Hall of Fame players that were in those drafts. And, like I would put Brock Bowers, if you said who can be in the Hall of Fame, put Bowers' name up there. And, like, the difference-making players that were in the past couple drafts, I don't know that that's there this year. I think there's a lot of good. I don't know that there's great. And high floor in the first round, I think some guys can be good and potentially be really good, but it's not like the just known true difference-makers that you got the past couple drafts.
Yeah, and Travis Hunter will be interesting. I mean, what is he? You know, is he a receiver? Is he a cornerback? Like, he's not playing both ways in the NFL. And I'm pretty positive he's going to be a cornerback.
I think he has to be, and
be a really, really good one. Like, he was obviously, you know, good in college, but I think Abdul Carter comes to mind too. Like, that dude for Penn State is. He's going to be in the mix for the number one overall pick. I mean, he's big. He's got a beautiful body. Like, that dude is made for what everybody wants. Like, 6'5", 260.
It's okay for you to say that.
Quick twitch. Yeah, I'm a pass rusher, bro. I mean, I'm all right with saying that. Like, that he's built like a pass rusher. You know, by the way, the most freakish individual that I've ever met or spent time with that just looks like it's out of a magazine, Brent, is Myles Garrett. Like,
oh gosh, yes.
It's not even real. Like, the dude's, you know, 6'5", 260. His muscles have, or his ears have muscles.
Yeah.
But, like, his
windmill
arms
dunks.
Are just this big around. His arms, you know, hang to his past his knees, and quick and fast, and I mean, just absolutely silly. I mean, that was one of the biggest freak shows I've ever laid my eyes on. And you know, those pass rushing guys, they just don't, you know, you don't make them, you know, like that. But Abdul Carter's got some of that in him. You know, he's got some of that freaky look to him. I mean, obviously the easy thing is to go to the Cowboys and find a guy that went to Penn State to kind of compare him to, because he kind of looks like him.
It'll be fun to see you actually maybe rank those edge guys in the draft and who you would take one first versus the next guy. All right. So, maybe last question, and we'll possibly get out of here. What are you going to remember most about college football this season? Because I think I have my answer. Thinking about that.
Mine would be the parity is great. Parity is back. Defense has been is great. More old school, like you know, more competitiveness, more spread out. The landscape is more across the board. The week to week was more fun because it was like, wait a minute, this upset actually could happen, you know, and that's not something we had said before in the past. So I think, you know, that's definitely something that sticks out to me is I think it was more fun week to week because you really didn't know what was going to happen and who was going to pull the upsets.
That's exactly my answer because especially when you consider the fact of the way the playoff seeding is structured and the automatic bids and the conference championship mattered and you're looking at, hey, Arizona State versus BYU versus Iowa State and how all those games played out and the way the ACC played out and how Syracuse and Miami became a humongous game when otherwise it wouldn't maybe necessarily have been that. And that to me is because I still think it is the best regular season in sports. I don't think any other sport can compete with it in a regular season basis. NFL has some good games here and there, but for the most part, there's a lot of not so great games.
You know, what's interesting is there's so many people that talks about like weekly that would say, you know, this diminishes, you know, the regular season, this diminishes the regular season, but it didn't. I mean,
no.
Like, yes, it definitely changed the jockeying position for sure. But it was really fun to look at that those last couple weeks and go, dude, who's in? And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. There's 10 extra teams that are vying for a spot. And we're talking about Alabama, South Carolina, Ole Miss, and who should be in, who shouldn't be in, right there kind of on the bubble. And that means you've got, you know, three or four more games to pay attention to and see before the championship week. And that might be something they look at too, Brent, is the championship week. And do you still do that? Because that'd be a way to speed up the season is not to do a championship week, not to have an extra data point that you do count or you don't count. What the freak are you looking for? You know, like I think, you know, that's something that you could also – you know, visit because not all conferences are created equally. That's just not the way it is, obviously. And, you know, are you rewarding? Are you taking away? And you kind of take that question away. You take the Notre Dame, you know, advantage of not being in a conference and being able to sit at home. And, you know, obviously it's a disadvantage if they're not in, if they're not in the 12-team playoff because they can't get an automatic bid. So that might be something to look at as well.
Well, and even the, like, Northern Illinois, normally the loss to Notre Dame, they were still in the championship game. Ohio State losing to Michigan, still in the championship game. That doesn't necessarily matter to me because, like, look at Ohio State and how you picked Tennessee in that game. And just because you're like, okay, they've been playing so not great and the struggle, and then they come and find it, and then we get to watch great football. So I do agree, though. The regular season to me was not diminished. It was more fun week in, week out, way more games matter. It's not just like, hey, I've got this one weekend where these games actually matter because I know the outcome for the other parts of the game. I think that is definitely not the case anymore.
Well, congratulations. Ohio State is your champion. What a playoff run for them. And now we'll get the declaring over the next couple of days that will change teams. And then we'll continue to see the teams that have cut players on it that will jump in the portal, and that will continue to be something we monitor, and then going on to the NFL. So plenty to talk about. So we'll see you guys soon. But thanks for this year, man. It's a huge year for us, Brent. Like, a lot of growth, a lot of people jumped on board. We thank y'all all for listening, and we'll continue to bring you football, more football, and a little more football.
And more football. Thanks.